Ladies and gentlemen, directly in my left, Air Force Lieutenant General retired Charles Chick Cleveland, West Point graduate, decided to go Air Force, flew the F-86 in Korea, is an ace, shot down 5 MiG-15s. He commanded at many levels and staffed to the highest levels of the United States Air Force. He is highly decorated, Distinguished Flying Cross, with an Oak Leaf Cluster, the Silver Star, Distinguished Service Medal, Legion of Merit, Air Medal with Oak Leaf Cluster, and many more. This is Lieutenant General Charles Chick Cleveland. Randy Ball, next to him, has flown more. He holds the record. He has flown jets in air shows more than any other air show pilot. Over 1,000 performances flying jets. He also flies the Russian fighters, test flew them, and has over 1,000 hours in flying the Russian jets. So please welcome Randy Ball. Randy, who is on your left? Quantify him for me.
Well, Doug may not be turned on. It's Doug Matthews that owns and operates the beautiful Sabre to our left.
Right. Doug, welcome. Thanks for bringing your jet today. Let's start. Chick, West Point, but you decided to go Air Force. Why?
Well, I graduated in 1949. That was before there was an Air Force Academy. So the Air Force or the Army agreed that some percentage of our West Point graduating class could go Air Force, depending on your rank in the class. And I luckily succeeded and went Air Force, which is my choice.
How do you describe the West Point experience? What did you get from that?
T-O-U-G-H. I learned a lot. It was a life-changing experience for me. I didn't enjoy it while I was there, but it sure looks great in the rearview mirror.
I noticed that you were not designated an ace from Korea until 2008. That's well over 50 years after you were there. How did that all come about?
Well, that's a story in itself, and thank you, Fred. It takes a little time to tell a story.
Good.
I'll shorten it as much as I can. When I left Korea in October of 1952, I had 4 confirmed victories, 2 probable victories. And I was pleased with that. Mark, I was a lieutenant, not many of them did that. And I lived with that for over 50 years, as you say, until I met a friend of mine who was also an ace in Korea. His name was Dolph Overton, and we called him Dee Dee. And Dee Dee said, "I know about your 2 probable claims. Why didn't you claim them as kills?" And I said, "Well, I just didn't." He says, I'm going to make one of those. I'm going to confirm one of those 50 years later." And I laughed and forgot all about it. But he didn't. He worked for years. Finally found the Russian records, which they had given to the United States under Glasnost. And those records were in the National Archives, too, at Silver Spring, Maryland. And he went up there. I went with him. Got a disc of every Russian MiG-15 sortie flown in the Korean War, and we were able to narrow it down to September 21st, 1952, which is the date I had a probable, and the Russians admitted the loss in exactly the same time, same place, and same circumstances that I had claimed the probable. And so several years later, the Air Force said, "Okay, number 5 is confirmed."
March 1952, you arrived at Gimpo in Korea. What was the situation on the ground at the time? Where were the North Korean troops? What was going on the ground? What was going on in the air?
Well, we were pretty much stable. The bomb line was pretty much stabilized up north. I was at Gimpo, which is just west of Seoul, and the combat zone, the demilitarized zone now, was 50 to 60 miles north of us, and American and UN troops were to the south, and Chinese troops were to the north. So we were, at that time, a stalemate.
And your missions were flying the F-86?
I'm glad you asked that question. The answer is air superiority. That's what the F-86s were charged with, is to establish, maintain air superiority. And that fluctuated back and forth during the war. The North Koreans had it when they first invaded the South in June of 50. But then our Air Force, with some help from the Navy, destroyed the North Korean Air Force totally. I mean, wiped them out in the air and on the ground. And so we had full air superiority at the time. And our fighter bombers were the F-51 at that time, the F-84, F-80 and the 84. And then the Russians introduced the MiG-15 into combat. A big surprise to those of us in the West. And they established immediate air superiority with a 3-to-1 victory ratio over our straight-wing fighters. And that's when they brought the F-86s over to counter the MiG-15. And in some air battles over a period of many months, we gradually asserted United States Air Force air superiority. And I'm happy to say the reason is so important is that our fighter bombers were supporting our troops, our United Nations troops, with air ground support, and were a key factor in what victories we had. But no United Nations troop, American soldier, or anywhere on the Korean Peninsula was ever subjected to a bombing or strafing attack by enemy aircraft. That's because they wouldn't come that far south because the 86s would kill them.
Randy, compare, would you, the 86 and the MiG-15 in terms of just pure aerial capability?
Well, of course, the 15 was the first swept-wing jet that the Russians had, or Russians built. It was powered by folklore has it, a stolen Rolls-Royce engine in it. It turns out later on that the British had sold them the technology before the Iron Curtain really came down. So it was very crude compared to the F-86. It didn't have as good a pressurization, didn't have near as good an ECS system, didn't have air conditioning at all. So in the summer months, it was pretty onerous in the cockpit. The G-suit system that they used, the valve was similar to the Sabre, but it had a reputation of sticking open or sticking closed. And so the pilot was intermittently getting a G-suit support when he's in a fight. Yeah, the 15, when it first came out, had a altitude advantage over the Sabre. But the Sabre had a much better speed advantage, particularly in a dive. The Sabre could outdive it significantly. And the Sabre, of course, originally had a slat wing like this F-86 behind us. And the North American, Doug could probably tell you better, but it redesigned the wing to what they call a 6x3 wing, added square footage to the wing, which gave the Sabre a much better turning at altitude and a much better service ceiling. So interesting the development between the two aircraft throughout the war. The 15 that was delivered to our country via a defector that Tom Collins and Chuck Yeager flew, they tried and tried to get it to go supersonic and even dove it straight down from 48,000 feet, and Mach 9.2 is it. It would get into a terminal velocity and lose pitch authority and just go straight down. So the Sabre was a significantly better aircraft in the big picture than the MiG.
Doug, how did you come to own your Sabre?
This is my third Sabre. First two were the Canadian version. And I wanted to get, 2 years ago, another F-86. There were very few available. This one was for sale. The prior owner had passed away. It was in Florida where I spent a lot of time, so I told him I'd take over the airplane and start the gradual refurbishment. We have another one in restoration, but it's a a 36-month project, which every time I ask the crew chief how we're doing, he says it'll be another 36 months. So it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Did you fly military?
I did. I was in the backseat of the F-4 and flew the A-4 a little bit and the F-9 Cougar, which was left over in the training command after Korea. Yeah, the Navy kept the F-9s until they introduced the A-4, TA-4s into flight training. So I was in the Navy. My parents were married, so I got in the Navy. If they hadn't have been, of course, I'd gone in the Air Force. No, I'm kidding, General. That was a joke, sir. No, my dad was Air Force, so...
General, when there were a lot of stories about MIG Alley. What was MIG Alley?
Well, that was an area south of the Yellow River. If you know your geography, you know the peninsula of Korea, 38th parallel, cut it right in half. The northern boundary to the North Korea was the Yellow River, which was a huge river originated in Russia and flowed northeast to southwest, emptied into the Yellow Sea. MIG Alley was the area just south of the Yellow River. About 60 miles south was a river called the Chongchong. And if any of you served in the Army, you'll know what the Chongchong River was, a river of death. But in that area, was where most of the combat between the MIGs and the 86s occurred. And could I add just a little bit to the comparison between the MiG-15 and the 86? Both airplanes had strengths and weaknesses. The strengths of the MiG-15, which I think have been covered, was that it could out-accelerate and out-climb any 86, and that's a pretty good start. It had a great gun package, a 37-millimeter cannon and two 23-millimeter cannons with a rate of fire about 400 or 500 rounds per minute each. It, luckily, it had a lousy gun sight, and their pilots weren't as good as we were. And the MiG-15 was rugged, and it was a fine little airplane. Big surprise to us when it showed up. The 86 was better constructed. It had a radar gun sight, the A1C gun sight. If you put the pipper on the target, even if he was pulling G's or pulling or Cliven or Diamond, if you fired, theoretically, your bullet should hit the airplane. And the A1C was great when it worked, which was 50% of the time. The rest of the time, we fought actually with essentially a ring and bead sight. Our gun package was six 50 caliber machine guns. Accurate, a lot of lead, but it was like shooting ping pong balls sometimes at the MiG-15, which was a very hardy constructed airplane. But we could hit, luckily the Russians, and the Russians, by the way, flew 75% of the MiG-15 sorties in Korea. The Chinese about 20%, the North Koreans about 5%, and a couple from Czechoslovakia, etc. But basically, our enemy over there were the Russians.